I'm Joe Lee with your play-by-play network sports man. Buck Showalter has his first chance to prove why Steve Cohen was right to choose him as the manager for this New York Mets team. Showalter has been highly regarded for the Mets' fast start, 26-14 to be exact, and a 7-game lead over this below 500 Miami Marlins. But with Max Scherzer's injury diagnosis being what it is, the modern-day Connie Mack gets his first chance to prove he is in fact worth the money. This won't be the only time the 65-year-old skipper will have to flash his baseball IQ. No, oh no. There will be plenty of times where Showalter will have to do that. This is just the first time he gets to do it in Queens. First time in a long time. And it's the first time the New York market gets to see if Showalter's time away from the game on TV affects the way that his players react to his famous managing style. I, for one, can't wait to have a front row seat. For the Play-by-Play Network, I'm Joe Leo.
This should be played at high volume.
You're listening to the Grind Hours Podcast.
You can either have the money and a hammer, or you can walk out of here. You can't have both.
Still in Chicago. As you can see with this horrible background behind me, this is my whole, just atrocious attempt at trying to show you that again, Soldier Field is right above my left shoulder here. But anyway, getting into things and who I have on for the guest spot for the Friday show. Again, we're recording this on a Thursday, but he will be coming on for the Friday show routinely for the foreseeable future, and that is my old WBCR partner for the walk-on, Austin Santiago. Austin, it's been a while. It has been a long while, but how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing all right, man. Keeping busy, keeping tabs on the sports world. Here in New York City, things are buzzing. Giants making moves, Jets doing their best, but I think the biggest story of them all is that the Yankees are on fire and the Bronx is burning again, but I know we're here to talk about what's cooking out west for the NBA Western Conference Finals, and I'm always just happy to be on the show.
Yeah, man. Let's jump right into it. Last night was game one for the Western Finals, and my big takeaway was, what the hell did we just watch? What is Dallas? That's my biggest takeaway from that game, is because we've seen the polar opposite of Dallas in the past two rounds of the playoffs. We've seen them get blown out by Phoenix on the road and then absolutely embarrass them in game seven. Fast forward to last night. I mean, it looked like they were back in game one in the Eastern or the Western semis. Like they didn't show up to play. And I know Luka got catch scratched across the face by Andrew Wiggins, and Jalen Brunson was Sir Flops a lot, but you know, Dinwiddie didn't show up to play. Finney Smith had a cool highlight dunk with like 5 minutes to go and the game was out of hand there. So, Austin, to you, who is the real Dallas team?
Well, I think unanimously the Dallas team is Luka Doncic. He is the face of that franchise, and this team lives and breathes on his performance. My reaction to last night's game was, this is normal. Honestly, that's how I feel. Luka Doncic is still so young, and I think what we're witnessing is growing pains in what will eventually be a Hall of Fame career. I'm happy that he's here. We've seen progression every year that he's been in the league. He's gotten a little bit farther, and now he's in the Western Conference Finals. This is a new territory for him. And I think that he's only going to get better from here no matter what happens this series. It's one game. This is a learning curve for them, and I think it's going to be a fun series. I think that win or lose, Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks team and organization is going to grow from this. I think they have a bright future ahead of them. But my reaction to last night's game in particular was growing pains. Welcome to the Western Conference Final, Luka.
I don't know if it's enough to say, like, can Luka save the Mavs this time? I don't think he can put the cape on against this Golden State team. And I've been quote unquote rooting against Golden State this entire playoffs. Not true, but that's what I've been told. I don't know if Luka can save them this time, because if Golden State shows up and they are the powers that be, even though they're a little bit older, like, Steph's going to have a game. He didn't have a game where he was 10 of 15 from three last night. That wasn't his game. Klay's going to have a game. Draymond's going to have a half. Jordan Poole's going to have a game. So can Luka? I think last night was the best chance for the Mavs to make a statement and actually show that they're for real.
Game one?
Yes, because
like that, like, I mean, there's so much basketball left to play. Look, I'm not going to say that like the Mavs are going to come back and win this series, but I do think that at some point we're going to see Luka ball out, whether it's one game or two games. And this team is not good. This is going to be a different Mavericks team next year with Luka Doncic at the helm. And, you know, this team makes the right moves in the offseason. This team can be right back here next year. This whole thing is just a learning experience. Sometimes you go to learning, you go to things, you go to games to I'll use myself as an example. It's not basketball, but when I was in community college, I was captain of the debate team. But before I was captain, my coach brought me to tournaments and said, you're here to lose and you're here to learn. Now, I know the Mavericks aren't willingly going to lose, but they are going to learn. They may lose in the process. And I think this is just what this is for Luka. He may not come out on top in this series. He'll get angry. And he's going to carry all that over to next year. But he gets better every year, and the team just needs to get a little bit better with him. And I think that they have a bright future ahead of them.
Maybe it was just my overreaction to game seven, where I thought, you know, this Mavs team could actually, you know, stand up to this Warriors team. It doesn't look, again, it's one game. It's an overreaction, but it's, and maybe it's this. And the other thing that I took away, and this is just from the NBA as a whole, is the NBA has a defense problem. You know how baseball fans are like, oh my God, the shift's the devil, and the 3-2 outcomes are ruining the game. Well, bad defense is ruining an NBA viewing experience for me. I don't want to turn on the Western Conference Finals and see a 40-point blowout. I don't. It's not entertaining. I turned the game off with like 7 minutes to go last night. That I shouldn't do that, but it's the Western Finals. These are supposed to be the best two teams in the Western Conference, and one team's blowing them out by 40. So I don't know what can be fixed. I don't know if there's rules that can be implemented, or, you know, incentives.
It could be a defense problem, but it could also be an experience problem. You know, look, I don't know. You know, the NBA is in young hands now. Like you said it before, the Warriors, as great as they are, they're older. This isn't the 2015 anymore. It's been 7 years since that first Warriors chip. Can you believe that? Since the Warriors really changed, it's almost a decade. And they're still here. Insane. So they're like now the grizzled vets. And I look at teams like the Mavericks and the Grizzlies and the Suns and the Bucks. Giannis is still very young, and the Celtics. And this league is in very good hands. But we're going to have to witness these growing pains in the playoffs for a couple of years, probably. And I find fun in that. I find that enjoyable. I know that I'm watching, going back to Luka, I'm watching the beginning of what's going to be a Hall of Fame career. And when the 30 for 30 comes out at the end of it, I do think he's going to have a ring one day. And they're going to talk about the 2022 Western Conference Finals and how they were like the Pistons for them. They were just overwhelmed and couldn't handle it.
I think it's more of the defense than anything that's causing my overreaction, just because it's non-competitive. And all defense is effort. That's all you have to do to play defense. You have to try. And you know, sometimes offense is better than defense, but not by 40 points. And especially what they did to dismantled Phoenix. I said it on Monday's show. Luka was like a superhero and just ripping the Phoenix
maybe
freight train
of Golden State that much better.
And
I don't buy that.
They look like the same old
Mavs.
What I've seen
from game one
in four games against
in Phoenix,
what was supposed to be the best a
couple of weeks ago.
Team in the West.
It looked like they didn't learn.
Is it really
anything?
I mean, you say defense problem. I mean, but the Warriors played great defense last night. They held Luka to like under 20% shooting. Andrew Wiggins clamped Luka. Will that happen again? I don't know. I mean, is it really a defense problem? I mean, because great defense was played last night by the Warriors.
No, but like over and over and over again, it's blowout after blowout after blowout. I that's not entertaining. Maybe it's a blowout problem. And I don't know what can be done to fix that, because it's like asking the team that's winning, don't try and don't do that, because that's ridiculous. But and the NFL went through something like this too, where the first round of the playoffs was always a blow. It always seems like one team blows the other team out of the water, but that's the first round of the playoffs. As you get further and further in the NFL, the games get closer and closer. And that's what I think should happen in the NBA. And it's not happening right now. And I don't know what to do about it, because with other problems in the other sports, there's foreseeable fixes that could potentially change the problem. With this, I don't see a potential fix, and that's troubling to me.
So, I mean, but there is, I mean, is there no entertainment? We've been watching the Warriors blowout teams for almost a decade, like you said, and it's fun every time. You know, when Steph Curry hits those crazy threes and is dancing on teams, that's entertaining. I get it. Like, we want every game to go into overtime, or we want every game to be, you know, 4-point game with 4 minutes left. But, you know, I also think there's entertainment value in you're watching the best players in the world play basketball. And it is crazy, just because it's the best players in the world, to see one team dominate another. That alone is crazy to see and a sight in itself. So, I mean, you know, just as someone who's like, I love the game, right? I love basketball. And maybe that's my problem, but like, I just find, you know, entertainment in every angle of it. But I think last night was entertaining, because it was like, holy, you know, look at this Warriors team. They can still go. And they're teaching this young kid a lesson right now. How is this young kid going to respond? It's not just about what happens in between the lines. It's what happens on the off days too. It's the storylines that are built. That's part of what makes basketball great. It's sometimes like WWE. It's like almost the most unnecessarily dramatic sport for some reason.
Yeah, and Jalen Brunson played a factor in that last night. He flopped like 15 times. It's ridiculous. And I like Jalen Brunson. I think he's a really talented player, but he was bouncing off people like pinballs last night. It was I hate it. But speaking of finding entertainment value in every aspect of the game, your favorite person in the NBA is back in headlines, and he's causing them this time. And what I mean by that is Patrick Beverley's on First Take. And first time I saw him was probably about early last week, and I was walking into a restaurant on the island, Geno's. Shout out Geno's in Elmont. I was like, is that Patrick Beverley on TV? And then they flashed the lower third, and I went, that is Patrick Beverley on TV. What the hell is he doing on TV? I don't picture the best trash talker in the NBA as a good TV personality. And you're the first person, whenever Patrick Beverley is mentioned in anything, you're the first person I think of because of your absolute disdain for one Patrick Beverley. You sent me a meme earlier this week. How are you feeling about this whole Patrick Beverley situation?
I feel validated. That's the word. I feel validated. I feel like everything I've said is correct about Patrick Beverley. He continues to prove me right. Making an ass of himself on TV. And now, just to clarify for the listeners, because I think Patrick Beverley is making an ass on himself, I am not running to the defense of CP3. I've also said on the podcast many times that I think on the low, CP3 is a politician and probably a huge dick. And he is. it goes to show that, but we knew that last year, I think it, or maybe a year, 2 years ago, I don't even remember now, when it was DeMarcus Cousins on the sideline yelling at CP3, this is why nobody likes you. CP3 is probably one of those guys where if you play with him, you learn a lot. He's great to watch and learn from, but behind the scenes, you know, probably not the easiest person to like. Going back to Patrick Beverley, though, I do think he overreached. You want to talk trash about CP3 and bring attention to that, fine. A lot of people do. But my issue with it is now he's talking about other players that blow him out of the water for no reason. There's one exchange that he had with J.J. Redick a few days ago that sticks out. J.J. Redick was talking about the Eastern Conference Finals matchup, and he mentioned Jason Tatum, saying how Jason Tatum plays both sides of the ball. And then Patrick Beverly, not on camera, unprovoked, says, "Oh, you mean he plays both sides of the ball?" And then JJ acknowledges him and says, "Yeah, what do you mean?" And Patrick Beverly just kind of like puts on this little face, says, no, keep going. Trying to talk down about this young kid who is balling out this year and showing his worth in the Eastern Conference Finals. Patrick Beverly's just there to hate. He's just there wishing on people's downfall, just drawing. He's there to be a hater. He's doing what he does best. Not like Draymond, because Draymond actually knows the game. I don't think Draymond would be good on any other team that wasn't the Warriors, but he does have a high IQ. Patrick Beverly, to quote Matt Barnes, who's another character in his own right, is not that guy, is never that guy. People are not afraid of Patrick Beverly. He's just a dude that growls and talks a lot of shit. But that doesn't make you a great player.
He's a pit bull. That's the reason.
No,
why.
I get so annoyed with this because it's casuals, NBA casuals that say, "Oh, he got that dog in him. Oh, he's a pit." No, he's not. Like, have you played this game? Look, not in the NBA, but I've loved and played basketball my entire life. Guys like Patrick Beverly get zero respect in the game. All they do is talk. All they do is talk. It's casuals that are like, "Oh, he's fun because he talks." No, that's not what makes a player great. Like, you're casual. Like, you don't say things like that.
I will end on this. I'll end this block on this. Speaking of only playing one side of the ball, he only really plays defense about half of the year. Let me defend Pat Bev because I love him. I absolutely love Patrick Beverly. But to be truthful about him, he only really plays defense about half the year and when it actually counts. He's not playing defense in October. He's not.
And when he's beat, he hurts guys. You know, when he's beat, he swipes their knees.
I'm not calling him a dirty player. I'm not going to that extent. But I will say he's like half a player because he only plays half the ball. He only plays one side of the ball half the year. And the other half of the year, it's just to talk loads of trash and be annoying. He's annoying.
And also, no, it's not even that. It's how embarrassing, crying like a baby because you made the play-in tournament or you won a play-in tournament game. You know, this is a guy who he wants eyes on him. He wants that attention. He wants it. It's obvious. He wants the attention. You know, and he knows how to get it. Crying like he just won an NBA Finals game. After winning up, like, that's embarrassing. And I'm happy that Timberwolves made the playoffs and, like, good for them. You know, I'd want a team to be happy to make it. But that's just, it's over the top and borderline unprofessional. He just doesn't have it, man. I'll tell you what, you know, he'd make a killing in Beijing. I'm sure the Beijing Sharks could use a point guard. I'm sure Patrick Beverly would do great overseas. I think that's where he belongs.
Listen, you got to celebrate your accomplishments. Whenever this podcast gets over the first 10,000 views, I'll be crying like Patrick Beverly, like I just won an NBA Finals game too. I'm not sitting here and saying that he's, you know, all defense and the best player in the league. He's not. He's like the 11th guy.
What did he say? He said, like the numbers say that when I'm guarding you, it's like Giannis is guarding you. Okay, you know what? Give a ball to Jason Tatum and see how that goes.
Yeah, no, Tatum would cook him. I'm not going to sit here and deny that. But he's probably, and this is, you know, take this for what it's worth. He's a rotation guy. He is a good rotation guy. He's a good guy to have on your team when it counts. Because he will win a championship one day playing in that defensive Draymond-esque role. Just play defense, get a few steals. That's all we want you to do. We don't need you to do anything else. Because, to be honest, if you get 4 threes from him in a week, it's okay. I don't want anything from you on the offensive side of the ball, Pat Bev. Keep talking trash.
He can't give it to you.
No, that's right. I don't want you hurting us in the offensive end. But I'm gonna stand up for my guy. I don't know about you on TV, my man. I don't know if that's the right career path for you. But if you want to do it and be the actual ex-player version of Stephen A. Smith, go for it. I'm not going to be watching it because I can't stomach First Take for more than 5 minutes once a year. But, you know, you do you. Go get your bag, Pat Bev.
I'm sure, you know, like someone said it best, Patrick Beverley on First Take is sports entertainment. That's what that is. Yeah. A term usually reserved for pro wrestling. But that's what it is. It's sports entertainment.
Austin, I think that's a good place to end. Thank you so much for coming on, my man. Again, Austin, you'll be on every Friday morning. And I'll actually be in the same state as you the next time that we do this. So until then, tell the people what you got going on, where they can find you and all that good stuff.
Oh, man, you can find me on Instagram, Austin M. Santiago. You can find me on Twitter at Airsanti. That's where I do most of my I don't post as much as I used to, but that's where I am. That's where I exist. So if you want to come through and say hi, hell, you can even come through to my LinkedIn. Why not? I'm on that more now because I'm a boring adult. Which is just my name. So with that in mind, that's all I got, man. Thanks for having me. Always fun to be on the show.
We're bringing back the walk-on just a little bit at a time here. And I'm so excited because when we were doing the show, little backstory, you know, this might go a little bit long, but who cares? It's my show. When we were doing the walk-on, I don't think we realized how lucky we were with what happened in not only the NBA, but just sports in general. Like, our first show was talking about Cap taking a knee. That's where we started. So just the journey that you and I have been on since we were put together by Danny Kogan, which that's a – if she fails at anything else, she could be a matchmaker. Just know that.
Yeah, that's true. And I hated Pat Bev the whole time.
No, yeah. But – yeah, just we're on a special wave here. So again, I'll talk to you soon. Be well, buddy.
Talk to you soon, man. Thanks for having me.
Feed Hudson Valley is a regional food rescue and harvesting network in the Hudson Valley, operating through Dutchess, Orange, Ulster, Columbia, Greene, Putnam, and Sullivan counties. It links donors of prepared but unserved food and fresh produce with nonprofits and food assistance programs. Through an app-assisted network of food donors, volunteers, and feeding agencies, Feed Hudson Valley facilitates the harvesting, processing, and distribution of locally grown or produced agricultural products, self-stable food donations, and prepared nutritious foods. The app used is called ChowMatch, and it is easy for volunteers to download and use. Among the donors are restaurants, farms, food makers, stores, hospitals, and universities. The food assistance programs include food pantries, soup kitchens, and shelters. Volunteers are matched through the ChowMatch app when a donation is available. They can indicate that they are available to make a run and then pick it up for a donor and deliver it to the agency. The Feed Hudson Valley Network currently includes over 300 volunteers, 130 donors, and 95 receiving agencies. Last year, on average, Feed Hudson Valley rescued and redirected over 12,000 pounds of food each month. Feed Hudson Valley could use more donors and volunteers. To learn more and sign up, visit feedhv.org. Again, that's feedhv.org. One more time, spelled out, feedhv.org. Now back to the podcast.
I wasn't going to do this for this part of the block or just talk about this at all, but I have to. I did a part of the show yesterday about the Yankees not really playing anybody and, you know, the two-week span of what they're about to face in the middle of June, but I have to revisit this part of it, and it has to, the Yankee-verse, I should say, this part of the Yankee universe. And it has to do with the fans. I honestly, I can't stand 90% of you people. And I'm one of you. I'm a diehard Yankee fan, and I can't stand you. And I don't even know where to begin. I mean, I have what I have written down. I have a roadmap, but I don't even know where to begin. I hate majority of the so-called serious Yankee fans. And it has nothing to do with, you know, new school versus old school. It has nothing to do with
them saying about a certain group of Yankee fans, you don't know the game. It has nothing to do with the fake bandwagon Yankee fans that are just at Yankee games for pictures or say they're a Yankee fan because it's the popular thing to do. I can't stand the people that call in and tweet stupid nonsense about a team that's 28 and 10. Yes, I got on them for, maybe their schedule is a little bit, or their record's a little bit better than who they actually are. But who they actually, what they are is a team that's 18 games over 500. They're a little bit better than that. They're still, what, 8, 9 games over 500. And, at some point in the year, you get hot again. That's a good baseball team. They're still a good baseball team. They're still a team that could win the division. And it has to do with two players. And yes, I've watched the games, so I'm not. So don't even come with me with that. Are you watching? Yes, I'm watching the games. I'm sitting down and watching the same baseball you guys are. But I'm not going to get on Hicks and Gallo because at the end of the day, not only can no everybody be hot all times, but everybody can't be a superstar. Everybody can't be superhuman. It's a team game. You need people to fit into the different quirks and cogs of a team and be a collective. I said it to John on the Tuesday pod. You need some Elmers. You need some glue guys. You need guys that aren't really going to be the superstars on the field, but they're the superstars in the clubhouse. And that matters. It doesn't. Yes, is it going to get you killed in the papers? Sure, but if you're a good glue guy, if the teammates like you and you keep the atmosphere light, that's what they need you for. Hicks, what he is he's a pretty good outfielder with a good arm, steals a couple of bases and gets on base. They're paying him to get on base. They don't care. It's the old Moneyball scene with Jonah Hill and Brad Pitt. They don't care how you get on base. They just want you to get on base. That's what they don't care that Hicks is batting barely over 200. They want him to get on base. Same thing with Gallo. They don't care that he's batting 170. They want him to hit homers. Hicks and Gallo are for two numbers. Hicks on base percentage. They want his on base percentage to be a certain number. I don't know what that number is, but when they look at Hicks at the end of the season, they want his on base to be a certain number, and they're happy with it. And they're happy with him as a player. With Gallo, they want his slugging percentage to be at a certain number, and they want him to hit a certain number of home runs and maybe drive in a certain number of RBIs. But that's it. They're not here for batting average. They're not here to be the superstars. They're not. No one's viewing them in the Yankee clubhouse the same way they're viewing Judge and Gallo or Judge and Stanton. Or even DJ. Those aren't the guys. Those two guys aren't the guys. And I don't understand why people get on them. I mean, I get it because they're on automatic out sometimes. But when you look at them as what their job is, it's not numbers. Yes, they want a certain number, but they're not looking at them solely as numbers. They're looking at them as people to get a job done. That's their job. Hicks, get on base. Gallo, hit home runs and slug. That's it. That's all. And on the Hicks contract side of it, because I've heard this also be brought up. And my dad and I were having a conversation on the car ride back home. Oh, by the way, bury the lead because of just pure anger and rage. I'm back in New York. The first part of this podcast it was recorded in Chicago yesterday, Thursday morning. It is Friday afternoon, 5:46 local time in New York when I'm recording this part of it. So this podcast will probably be out at 7 o'clock. I don't care. I'm getting it done. And back to the Hicks contract. The Hicks contract is not as bad as you think it might be. Yes, these numbers might seem outlandish to you, but I'm gonna explain it to you why it's not that bad. Hicks's contract for the remainder of his time in Pinstripes. He is under contract until 2025 with a player option in 20, or a club option, excuse me, in 2026, which, given the rate that he's playing at now, I don't believe in 2026 they're going to pick up a $12.5 million club option. I just don't see them doing it. But the remainder of this year, 2022, $10.5 million, 2023, $10.5 million, 2024, $9.5 million, and 2025, $9.5 million. 98% of major league teams would sign Aaron Hicks to that contract. 98% of them. There are certain teams, maybe even 100% of them, but the other 2% would look to trade him off for pieces. Almost every team in the league, when they look at Aaron Hicks as a ball player and the skills that he brings on a day-to-day basis, they would sign him to that contract. And if you don't think he's worth that contract, you don't understand the pay scale of where Major League Baseball is at. You don't. Because $10.5 million is not viewed the same way 5 years ago that it was viewed. The bare minimum guys. Look at Mark Canha. Look at Eduardo Escobar in Queens with the Mets. They're getting around the same amount of money. They're even getting more money than Hicks is. And I would take Hicks certain nights over those two guys. I don't get it, man. I really don't understand it. It boils my blood with understand where we are as a game. The game changes. Yes, it's still the same game you've been watching since you were six, fundamentally, but the money scale changes. The way that you look at a game changes. You can still enjoy it. I'm not saying you have to be an analytical nerd to not enjoy it, but you need to at least have some capacity, because that's what baseball is down to its core. It's a numbers game. I don't understand. I really don't. It really pisses me off the way that some Yankee fans are view the team. We're 28-10, man. 28-10. Best record in the game. We have half the roster every team in the league wants, even championship level teams. We have four closers on our team, four that can actually do it. You don't deserve this team. You don't deserve to root for a winning fan base. A winning organization, I said. You don't deserve to be a winning fan base. I'm getting my words mixed up because I'm so angry. I shouldn't be, because I should just move them aside maybe and not really pay attention to it. And that's what I'm going to do from this point on. I'm not going to pay attention to you. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to mute you on Twitter. Yeah, fine, at me, but I don't care. I'll read it, but I'm not going to respond to it. It's so... I'm done. I'm done with it. And it's May 19th, May 20th at this point, and I'm done with... Maybe it's just this point in the year. At this point of the year, I want to be done with something. Every single year. Done with something. I'm done with this. I'm... Ay, ay, ay. You don't... If you... badmouth this team and you don't understand what's really going on, you don't deserve to root for this team. Again, I'll say it again, 28-10. What are you really looking at and complaining about and crying about with a 28-10 team? Yes, again, will they revert back to the mean a little bit? Sure, they'll be a little bit worse than this throughout the year. But if they're not, do you really want to complain? Do you really want to look back on this season? And if we do, let me entertain for just a second the idea that the Yankees won the World Series. If you do, Do you want to look back on this year and go, well, I really complained? They're not going to admit it to themselves, but people are going to complain about this year. I want to go back and look at 09 and look at all those calls, and Twitter wasn't really a thing in 09 like it is today. But I want to look at all the sad Yankee fans and ask them if they felt this way in 09 about Swisher when he wasn't hitting, or about A-Rod when he wasn't hitting, or Teixeira getting off to a rough start, or Burnett really having a lull in the middle of the year in 09. I want to ask those people, were you getting on them? Were you? Because if you weren't, then shut up and actually enjoy this team. And one more thing about Gallo, just circling back to the guys that actually play on the field. Before I truly get off of Yankee Twitter for the rest of the year, I want to ask you this question. I'm going to post this on Twitter with the pod when it comes out, and on Spotify. If Gallo hits 35 home runs and 90 RBIs, are you happy? Forget batting average, forget on base, forget the slugging. If he hits 35 and 90, are you happy? And I'll get out, I'll shower off my second shower of the day, collect myself, and after the break, I'm going to talk about something in college that is a big deal that really shouldn't be. Back after this.
Hey kids, are those ancient records getting tiring in these troubled times? Finally, time to get your ass off the couch and make something of yourself? Well, of course not, because there's yet another podcast you'll be recommended and not actually listened to.
Put on your fun hats, we're on our way.
You're damn right. All jokes aside, if you're a fan of the Grind Hours podcast with Joe Leo, you'll be right at home here. Want to know that the Ford Bronco is back?
Guys, the Ford Bronco is back.
Indeed, the Ford Bronco is back. Alongside those pressing news snippets, you'll get complaints about the Wilpons, Bobby Bonilla, and the New York Mets, as well as riveting life advice from the resident love swami, Nicholas J. Paradis.
I saw condoms in my son's plastic bag when we arrived at the house. Two packs with 36 each. Jesus Christ, dude.
Subscribe at your local podcast depository, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts. New episodes are posted weekly every Friday. For our weekly advice segment, please send us a message over at anchor.fm/children's-programming-pod. We always look forward to hearing from you.
Finishing off the podcast for today, it's another topic that I was listening to in the car. Has to do with NIL deals, and I was battling myself the entire day, traveling back from the airport and getting ready to record the last half of this show. If I even really wanted to do this, and the answer at the end of the day is yes. I do want to do it because at some point I am going to have to talk about it. And I want to get my feelings out now while they're fresh and while it's still kind of in the news. And it wasn't, solely on the fact that I was listening to the fan in New York on the way back home, but also, what the saga between Saban and Deion Sanders and Jimbo Fisher and all the comments that have been made about NIL deals and football and how it translates to the rest of college and the college sports and the amateur scene. It's the Wild West. It has been the Wild West for a very, very long time. For anybody who's saying, well, this shouldn't be happening, well, why? The transfer portal allows the players to do the exact same thing coaches have been doing for years. The coaches are allowed to get boatloads of money, and 3-4 years down the line, before the first recruiting class that they have even has a chance to graduate, they go way across the country to coach somewhere else for even more money. So the transfer portal allows the players to do exactly what the coaches have been doing. And the NIL deals allow the players to get money that they've been extorted for. It's been extortion. The NCAA has been allowing these universities to basically get free labor and profit $1 billion off of them, billions of dollars. So to get some scratch, and yes, the numbers might be staggering. 3 million to a college kid is staggering, but guess what? They deserve it. If you're going to Alabama or Texas or USC or Georgia or Florida for football, you deserve it. If you go to Kentucky or Duke or Arizona or Gonzaga or pick your school for basketball, you deserve it. Yes, do I understand it opens Pandora's box, but Pandora's box has been opened with this. People have been doing this for years. We're just now noticing it because it's legal. But they've been getting money for years. And people have been trying to hush it and throw it under the rug. But no, you can't do that anymore because now it's legal. Yes, can you frame it in a way that puts up a pay structure or allows the universities to have some sort of idea of where they can or allocate their money or how much money they can give to people? Fine. If you want to put a salary cap on this, fine, do that. So it's even playing field for the entire country, or somewhat even playing field for the entire country. But if you're complaining about the sanctity of the game and the good of college sports, you haven't been paying attention to what's been going on the past couple of years and even the past 2 decades. Since I've been living, there's been stuff going on. Maybe, and I bet even before I was born, even before you were born, that there was stuff going on. And back channel deals and handshakes and loads and loads of money being poured into universities to go get a certain player. So at the end of the day, it boils down to it being good for the players. The other thing that no one's talking about this is it's going to change the way that the pro leagues structure their rules around college, about eligibility for the drafts for the major sports, and the rookie pay structure. Because let me use a player in Alabama, because Saban said that 25 players got over $3 million at Alabama last year. If you're a second string safety at Alabama, and you get some playing time, but not a lot, but you have the opportunity to play for a starting position, and you're getting $3 million a year to play college ball, why wouldn't you come back for your senior season and get another $3 million? You're not going to get that money as a second or a third round pick in the NFL. So the NFL now has to change the pay structure to incentivize college kids to come and actually play in the league. Because some kids are going to make their entire rookie deal. Like the kid from Ohio State who's now playing at Texas, who left high school early to go to Ohio State. He got, I think, $10 million or something, maybe $1 million, something crazy. And now he left and he went to Texas to get even more money. And if he really wants to, he can bounce next year and go to USC or to Florida or to Florida State or to Texas Tech and get even more money. So he can have the potential to make $10 million in 4 years at university, college level. Why would he go pro? Why? And for majority of these kids, they're not going to go pro. So getting the money in college, yes, it is an exuberant amount of money. It is more money than I could even dream of, $3 million. If I had $3 million at 19 years old, I don't even know where the hell I'd be. I don't. But it's good for, like, these kids aren't going to get that money because most of them are not going to go pro. And even the ones that go pro, it'll change the way that
these leagues view their pay structure, because that's the one thing that is evident in every single major sport. The kids, quote unquote, the young players are the best players in the game. And to get, you want to pay them for their highest productive years. And it's going to change that. What's going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years is going to drastically change the way that we look at professional sports. Because not only with the NIL deals in college, but I'm telling you what this is going to do, it's going to revolutionize the way that the rookie pay structure is set up. It's not going to be that the rookies aren't getting paid. They're going to be the overpaid ones. The guys that are just coming out of the draft, they're going to be the overpaid ones. The 36, 37-year-olds, those are going to be the underpaid ones. They're going to be the ones that are going to barely hang on to the $2, $3 million deals in all major sports. That's what's going to happen. And if you already have a gourd of money and a war chest of money by the time you're 36, you know, maybe it just stays to a young kid's game. Maybe, you know, we see guys retire at 35 because they have $580 million in playing money that they haven't touched. That's going to happen. And I think it's good because it's competition. The NCAA now is direct competition with the NBA and the NFL, and more so in the NBA, because they already changed the G League rule, where you have to, you know, stay a year in the G League and wait that year out, but you can still get paid. Well, now you can get an education and get paid $3 million, and I know some of the guys that are getting $3 million or even more money are not going to class, and that's a different conversation. But the guys that are getting, you know, even $10,000 and going to class and getting a college education and getting a lot of money for a college kid, good for them, because guess what? They've earned it, because decades upon decades upon decades of other guys and gals have not gotten this money and haven't been able to have the likeness deals and be paid for their work, because they are working. I've been a college athlete, not at the highest level, but I know what that work-life balance is like, where you have to go to class, you have to go to practice, and you still want a social life because you're a college kid. So I get it to a certain degree. And the other thing is, to go back on the sanctity level of the game, if you really want to watch for the love of the game and college kids playing because they love the sport, watch Division II and Division III college kids play. Watch those kids play. Watch lower tier Division I teams play. Because those are the leagues and the ranks that aren't, or the conferences and the ranks that aren't getting the NIL deals to a certain extent. I've talked to a couple of coaches at Iona, and the NIL deals haven't really affected them much. Yeah, so there's some sponsorships here and there for, you know, random stuff, yeah, or, you know, an equipment company, yes, but it's not that much money, and it doesn't really impact them, and that's fine. But if Rick Pitino wants to, you know, put half of his life's earnings on the line to get five really, really good college players to come play for Iona and win a national championship, well, good for him, because he can do that, and good for the university, and good for those kids for getting that money. I'm not going to sit here and be, you know, a get-off-my-lawn guy, and what happened to the college game of my youth? It's better now. It is. Because not only is the level of play great, the kids are getting paid. And they're, again, it is their money. Maybe this is just the capitalist in me, but good for them. I'm actually rooting for them. I hope a kid gets $30 million to play basketball at Kentucky next year, or $50 million to go play for Lincoln Riley at USC. I hope that's the case, because it will shake things up. It'll
It'll make everybody reevaluate everything. And I know that there's some regulations that are coming. And I hope the NCAA, for once, actually gets it right, because for as long as I can remember, they've always dropped the ball. So maybe if you really want to legislate this out, get it right. Put in a pay structure where universities can't go over a certain amount of money. And I don't know what that money is, but that's the way to fix it. Make it fair for everybody. Give everybody the same even level playing field. And if some universities can't reach that level because they don't have the big pockets of the boosters, well, then that's what, I mean, that's every sport. There's small market teams and big market teams. And it's just going to level out that level of competition. And it's good. It will end up being good. I know we're in the Wild West, but it's not that big of a deal because it's been going on for years. And the one thing that I come back, there's two things that I come back to with this. Kids are getting paid and they're now being able to act exactly like the coaches that recruit them to come play for them in the first place. Why is that so bad? All right, if you've reached this point, please like, subscribe, share this podcast to anybody who you seem fit. If you're new to the show, it means more to the show than you know. Please go over to feedhv.org. Please go to the Children's Programming podcast. And I will drop the two pieces that I've been working on next week. I'm aiming for Tuesday and Wednesday next week to drop two articles back to back along with this podcast. Again, it's first week of daily shows. Back on Monday, I'm gonna say, with a programming note, I'm gonna try for noon Eastern time. I know, because I've been in Chicago this week. The last three podcasts have come out around 1 Central time. This one's coming out probably about 7:30 Eastern time. So I did say on the Cinco de Mayo episode that some of them are going to be later, some of them are going to be earlier, but that's the lay of the road. There will be an upload. It's just a matter of when it's going to be, but the target time is noon Eastern. And until then, till Monday, it's closing time. Have a good weekend. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Let's go, Rangers. Peace.